Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hall. Live and local. Chicago Sports Talk for your morning on 670 The Score. Mully and Hall Flashback.
The one reality of the National Football League is you have to fix one position. If Jim Collins were writing a book on good to great in the National Football League, he would just say, put all your resources in fixing the quarterback, and he would be right. I mean, until that, you can't get out of mediocrity until you improve the position of quarterback. You just can't do it because these games are won by quarterbacks. That's why they're making $40 million a year, $35 million a year. And if you have a quarterback who, like the Rams have, who is not exactly a great player, and you pay him $35 million, that's a double dip. Then you're really hurting your team. You know, so you've got to be completely objective with the quarterback position, and you've got to hit on that.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to The Score. That's Michael Lombardi. We talk to him all the time during the season, and he's absolutely right. And, David, you know, we know the NFL owner meetings are at the end of the month, and so over the last few days, increasingly some of these projected rule changes have been kind of leaking out, and I think it's so much fun to go over them. But with that in mind, what Michael just said, there's a rule change that has been proposed, I believe, by the Philadelphia Eagles, that as an alternative to an onside kick, you would take a 4th and 15, and you would try to convert a 4th and 15. And if you did, then obviously you maintain the ball. You basically get the ball midfield for a 4th and 15, and then if it fails, then you're giving up great field position and you're going to lose the game. But if you can make it, then obviously you've got a chance to win, and it's like an onside kick. Onside kicks aren't working. You don't see a lot of onside kicks work, so it's a way to extend the game and keep people interested. I hate it. I hate the idea. Because it means, basically, if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, you're in every game. Not that you aren't anyway, but it favors the team with the best quarterback. It favors Aaron Rodgers significantly over Mitchell Trubisky. And I think that, you know, again, if the Bears get Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson, I'm in favor of the rule. But at this point, I hate it because defensive-minded teams is, you know, here's the problem. If you're Mahomes, who cares if you throw a pick? It's 4th and 15. So just go all out. Who cares what happens? It's such a all-or-nothing type of play.
I like innovation. I welcome these tweaks to make the game more exciting. I don't like this at all because it is too fluky to me. And it doesn't really reward teams for the way that they play because it does leave out this sort of this area, you know, for 58 minutes of the game. And then you do have an unnatural and unscripted approach to this 4th and 15 desperation move where you are going to have throws that you would never ordinarily make or plays you wouldn't ordinarily call. And it's too out of whack with everything else. The onside kick is something that, you know, they changed the rules so you don't get the run. All those things that made the onside kick harder to recover. I would be more in favor of them adjusting those things to make maybe the onside kick easier to recover or give the kicking team somewhat of a more or be it less of a disadvantage rather than the 4th and 15 desperation heave, because that's what it would become. And I don't like that kind of making it so fluky at the end of games.
I would prefer so you kick the extra point and you want to do an onside kick. Instead, you get the ball at like the 8, and you got one play to try to score a touchdown, because you know, the end zone itself proves to be a barrier against a long pass or a flukish touchdown or whatever. And it does check your creativity a little bit because you can't really go downfield. And if you convert that, then you get the ball. But it's more like a conversion play than an actual play that could score a touchdown or give you points out of it or something like that. I just feel like it punishes the team that tries to play defense, and it favors whatever team has the better quarterback.
It's hard enough to play defense already in the NFL.
Yes,
we need another rules change to make it better for the quarterback. Goodness sakes, those guys have every advantage already. The receivers can't get touched. Come on. No,
spoken like
you.
A true defender.
Yeah.
Okay. The other rule, I don't like that rule. Baltimore has got this idea for overtime. Okay, it's called the spot and choose idea. I think this is brilliant. I think this is so cool. So you get the ball and you determine where on the field you're going to take the ball. You know what? I'm going to set myself up at the 1 yard line, and then the opponent gets to say, no, I'm going to take that. So would you have to put the ball to 50 every time? Would you put the ball to 40? I just love the idea of spot and choose.
You'd put it at the 10 every time. You put it at the 10, right? That's the way you would want to do it. And
well, then you're giving yourself a field goal. You're giving away a field goal just by being at the 10, right?
But no, you put it at the opposite 10. So you
your own 10.
Yes.
Wow.
That's the way that you do this.
I go it like my own 40.
I don't know. I don't know that I would see. I think that it creates another level of strategy that to me is more in line with a football coach's thinking and approach. It's not that it maybe carries an element of flukiness, but no more than what the current overtime rules are and how kind of out of whack they are. So this is a change. The one thing I don't understand, Molly, maybe you can help me grasp this. The way it was explained in the stories coming out of this was if there's two teams, in Team A and Team B, and Team A wins the coin toss, Team A chooses the spot on the field where the first drive of overtime begins. But Team B gets to choose whether it wants to play offense or defense.
Yes.
It's beneficial to lose the coin toss.
Well, I mean, it's sudden death. We're back to sudden death.
Because so you want the ball. So if you win the toss, you don't get the ball. You get the field position choice. So you want to lose the coin toss so you can maybe take the ball.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, it's a great point.
See,
you know,
that's the
anybody wants the ball. If it's sudden death, it goes back to the coin flip kind of winning sudden death, right? Because but if you set up at, like, let's say, okay, I'll take the ball at my 6. Can you drive down the field and get the field goal before you have to punt and the other team comes at you?
If it's sudden death and Mitch Trubisky is your quarterback, you want the football because you think this time that play is going to work, right?
Yeah.
And I can't lose if I have the football. So you want the ball.
It's like, I think that the time period would be like 7 minutes. You would change the time period and it would be sudden death. The idea would be to get the game over with faster. Part of the idea, I think, David, is you want to make sure that you're not playing a full overtime because you also might want to add games during the week. That's one of the things they're talking about. Instead of having all these games on Sunday, they found out that they could play Tuesday and play again on Sunday if they really needed to. And while you have to protect teams doing that, it would give you another day of the week to own, and it would give you a chance to kind of jump in. If you play the following Monday, maybe you could use a Wednesday game, right? Wednesday to Monday is like Tuesday to Sunday, and if you set the schedule correctly, the NFL could be on, you know, 4 or 5 days a week, for God's sake.
Every night.
Hey, why wouldn't you?
Listen,
why not make every game an event?
I'm the guy that reserves Tuesday night for Maction, so give me more football during the fall. Every single night, it's fine with me. Everyone's going to watch. People can't get enough of the NFL. So this rules change is with that in mind, but it is also people are just sick of the old overtime rules, so this gives you an element of strategy maybe that incorporates that with the luck that is involved already and maybe gives us a better alternative. I do like it. I think it needs tweaked, but I do like the direction it's headed.
I just love the choose thing. I love the idea, you know, okay, we got a candy bar. Okay, well, I want half. I want half too. All right, you cut it, and I'll take the bigger half. So then you become the most precise person cutting it. I love that idea. That's where the fairness comes in. But you're right. If both teams don't touch the ball, then you just want the ball. You just want to win. Okay, I'll take the ball at my own one.
You always think you're going to be able to be the team that can sustain a drive and put together this game-winning drive, no matter who your quarterback is or overmatched you may be against that defense. You may have the best be facing a really tough defense, but you still think in overtime, I'm going to find a way.
I think NFL teams would probably go with the 25. They would probably just try to, you know, take all the suspense out of it, and then okay, we're going to stop you there. It's a difficult one, but again, there would be a clock that you'd be facing too. So if you were going to have to punt, you know, maybe run the ball a few times if you're in bad field position, just to eat up that clock.
That's a really interesting one to consider. But this final proposal in regard to the hiring process, Mully, is, I think, the one that's going to create the biggest controversy.
See, I think we disagree about it. But Buffalo has proposed that there be no coach or GM interviews until after the Super Bowl. So the season ends, and you're not rushing to fill a position. I think more coaches might be fired in season, but I think that the idea is, in order to be fair about everybody getting an opportunity for a job, you're not taking minority candidates that might happen to be in the Super Bowl out of the mix. So I think what this is, what I find amusing about it, the idea would be that these NFL owners, they're like fans, you know? They watch the big game. They watch the Super Bowl, and they're like, Todd Bowles, boy, he had a great game plan. Let's go hire him. That's the thinking, that there would be you would be influenced by who wins or loses the game as to who you end up hiring moving forward.
You would be, and you probably should be.
Yes.
I mean, the fact that Todd Bowles did not get a head coaching job this cycle is terrible, because he's deserving. The problem I have, okay, the owners do think like fans, so there might be that knee-jerk reaction, which I don't know how bad it would be or how different it would make it. What I don't necessarily like about this proposal is, while I understand and acknowledge and agree that the NFL needs to do a better job to create more minority opportunities for head coaches, I don't know if this would do that, and I also believe that you would be suspending other teams from making some sort of progress and delaying their off seasons from beginning by a month.
Yeah.
Because the Bears, you know, they had their season ending press conference, what, early January? The Super Bowl wasn't over until early February. What are they going to do with that month? They can't do anything if they don't have a coach, if they fired their coach.
Well, I mean, you'd have like a series of secret meetings and, you know, cheating going on like crazy.
Legal tampering.
And then the minute, it would be like legal tampering, the minute that the Super Bowl ended, like six guys would be hired as GMs or as head coaches, whatever it might be. And you'd see more packaging of GM and coach probably in terms of these secret meetings, because you could then make the hire like that.
In theory, it does make it fairer and maybe a better solution to a problem that has persisted for way too long. But in practice, I think you're exactly right. I don't think teams would be able to help themselves from tampering, if you want to call it that, or positioning themselves to hire who they wanted to hire, and these sort of unofficial meetings and conversations would take place anyway.
But you'd still have the Rooney Rule. You'd still have, you know, you would not be able to not interview a minority candidate. You'd have to do that. You'd have to be more open to it, I would imagine. I think it's a way of stopping teams from you know, and I do think there could be more coaches fired and more interims thrown in or whatever it might be, but I don't know that they would keep their jobs. I think that it would be fascinating to kind of witness how they went about it.
You're basically telling a team, though,
you got to wait a month.
The most successful sports organization or league in America, telling them that for a month it's basically factory shut down for everyone who isn't in the playoffs. So if you're the Detroit Lions, you basically are going to take every January off because you know you're not going to be playing in the postseason. And you can't operate. You can't plan. You can't strategize. You're basically stuck in this organizational limbo.
Look at what are these teams doing anyway? I mean, come on. You know, we can meet all day and we can talk all day, but we can't get anything done anyway. I like the idea of forcing them to stop for a little bit and maybe consider some candidates. It's so unfair. If you're successful, you can't get a job. Listen. You know what? We can't hire Todd Bowles because he's not available to us, so we'll hire somebody else that doesn't really deserve his job. I think there are more qualified candidates often that are in the big game, and there's nothing wrong with pausing to make that work. I know teams would be against it, and I know that maybe it would keep more general managers. You would have more guys that get to keep their jobs. You'd have to think about pulling the plug on everything quicker. What's wrong with that? Guys shouldn't be fired after 1 year or 2 years anyway.
I agree. Teams need to be smarter, but I don't think that you need to respond to their lack of foresight and their inability to show this sort of organizational discipline by changing the rules for everybody. Just encourage them to be smarter and have more rules in place, maybe to encourage this kind of hiring process that wouldn't leave us with these questions all the time. I mean, teams need January, Molly. What else would Matt Nagy have done that month without interviewing 9 defensive coordinator candidates?
He could have laminated all his plays, for God's sake. Put them up on the wall. That takes time. All right, we're going to bring in Ross Tucker to the conversation. Again, I like it. You don't like it. That's what makes it fun. We can argue about it with Ross. We'll do that next. It's Molly and Haw on The Score.
You are listening to the number one sports morning show in Chicago, Molly and Haw. But now you can watch the show live on Twitch. Just search 670 The Score on twitch.tv or on the Twitch app. Check it out now. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
It becomes a point in time as a player to where it's, you know, I can't want to be in Chicago more than they want to have me in Chicago. That's the thing, you know. I mean, if you asked me this question a year ago, you know, you would have probably got a completely different answer. But at this point now, it's like, you know, if we can make it work, cool. If not, cool. You know, it's not, you know, I'm not getting so caught up in, you know, where it's like I said before, I'm not tying anybody's hands. I'm not begging. I'm not asking nor forcing anybody to pay me, you know, or like if we want to make something happen, cool, fine and dandy. If not, we both can move forward.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of Allen Robinson. He was on the Chris Collinsworth podcast featuring Richard Sherman, and he's been everywhere, and he's talking a lot about the franchise tag and what the Bears' options are for him and what his options are, which would be a long-term deal with 31 other teams, I believe, is one of the things he said. We're delighted to welcome in Ross Tucker. He's joining the show, Radio.com NFL Insider. Insider calls presented by BetQL. Get access to data and insights for sportsbooks, the ones they don't want you to see. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. Check out Ross's daily betting podcast, BetQL Daily. It's live every weekday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Radio.com. Ross, God bless you. Good to see you. It's wonderful you've joined us on Twitch.
Morning, yeah, Ross. Absolutely. Good to see you guys as well. This is fantastic. And look, I got to tell you, Allen's not really going anywhere, right? I mean,
no.
Given where the Bears are with Pace and Nagy, I mean, and seeing what the franchise tag number is, it feels like it's much ado about nothing. I feel like there's a 0% chance that Allen Robinson plays for another team in 2021. If you guys know more than I do, please let me know. But as a quote-unquote national guy or as an outsider, they can't afford to lose him. And I tweeted this the other day, at Ross Tucker NFL, the franchise tag numbers seem like bargains. You know, compared to what these guys are making now, the Green Bay Packers could franchise tag Aaron Jones for $8 million. Are you kidding me? I mean, all these other guys just sign these long-term deals for 10, 11, 12, 13 million a year, and the Packers can just rent him one more year for 8 million. That's what I would do. And for the Bears, you know, 15.8 for Allen compared to what some of the other guys are getting seems like a bargain.
I don't disagree with that, but I think players look at it, they want the security, and they almost seem – they look at the franchise tag as a sign of disrespect, which is, I guess, a sign of the times, perhaps, Ross. What I wonder, though, is what you think as a former player and somebody who is now an analyst in the league. Allen Robinson has been pretty vocal. He has been, whether it's on podcasts or traditional media or social media, he's been very vocal about where he stands on this. The Bears have not. What role do you think the media aspect, that public relations push on behalf by the agent, on behalf of the player, plays in the thought process by the team, if it has any effect at all?
It's a really good question. And I think it depends a lot on the team. And I think it depends a lot on what the guy is saying. It's interesting because, you know, I think when you say something once or twice, I'd be curious to hear what the fans, the Bears fans think. Because I think when you say something once or twice, the fans are like, yeah, pay him. He deserves it. But it's like when you're talking about it all the time and going on all these different media platforms, I would imagine that some of the fans are like, all right, guy, like, we get it, man. Like, you want to get your money. Like, we totally get it. We're with you. We got it. But enough already. And I think I can see some people feeling that way. Look, the Bears know that he wants a long-term deal, okay? But everything they're negotiating has to be based off of that franchise tag because that's a tool that they can use. And I know Allen doesn't want to hear that, and he just wants to get his $20 million a year or whatever Julio Jones and these guys make now. But that's just not good business. I mean, I think they're both sides have to be reasonable. Is Allen Robinson worth more than $15.8 million for just this year? Yeah, of course. But that's what they can pay him for just this year because of the way things worked out. So if he's not willing to meet in the middle a little bit or give a little bit and not be the highest paid receiver in the NFL or one of the two or three highest paid, then I wouldn't blame Pace one bit if he franchise tagged him this year. And you're right, guys don't like it, but it is what it is. I mean, that's one of the things that they have to use to keep their best players.
Ross, we know the Bears are desperate for a quarterback. That's the word I'm going to use, desperate. And I think part of it is that, you know, the general manager has been here a while and he hasn't hit on a quarterback and he has another shot at it. And increasingly, we're hearing a chorus of voices that are predicting a big move, a bold move. The Bears are finally going to get it done. If that doesn't happen, what happens then? How does the season go on? If you come back with effectively the same team, if they can't make the bold move, how disappointing is that for the team itself as well as the fan base and everyone around here?
Well, I guess my first question is, I would think that the only two really big, bold moves that I can think of, and if you guys can think of somebody else, let me know, would be Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson, right?
That's it.
Those are the two big, bold moves. I guess I just wonder, what do the Bears have to offer those teams that's more than what some of the other teams drafting in, like, the top 10 would have to offer? You know, like, I don't think there's any chance Deshaun Watson goes to the Chicago Bears. Because I think that if he gets traded, he gets traded to the Jets who have the number two pick or the Dolphins have the number three pick so that the Houston Texans can draft their next quarterback of the future. I just don't see how the Bears with the 20th pick and, okay, we'll offer you next year's first-round pick as well. I mean, I guess they could include like a Roquan Smith, but I think it's going to be tough for the Bears to offer more than what these other teams are offering, unless they just offer everything, in which case it's like, okay, then what how does that help you have a decent team out there on the field? I will say this. We talked about this last time we were on together. Desperate times call for desperate measures. I think that everyone is in agreement that Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy are on the hot seat. Although I got to tell you guys, I was thinking about this knowing I was going to come on with you guys. You know, Matt Nagy's 28-20 with bottom 10 for sure and probably bottom 5 quarterback play during that time. And honestly, like, their roster has been middling at best, I would say. I mean, Khalil Mack's a good player, Akeem Hicks, AJ, like, they've got some good players, but if you objectively looked at all 32 NFL rosters, the Bears aren't in the top half of the league. I mean, look at their skill guys. Look, I mean, they look, even look at their O-line. They're probably not in the top 20 in the league. So, I don't know. Sometimes I laugh a little bit when I hear about Nagy on the hot seat, just in the sense that 28-20, two playoff berths in 3 years. If Cody Parkey doesn't do the double doink, he has a home playoff win with bottom 10 quarterback play, arguably bottom 5 quarterback play. But at any rate, Ryan Pace is desperate. He should be. He doesn't care that much about future years, because if he doesn't get it done this year, he knows he's gone. My guess is they tag Allen Robinson. And then what are the other assets that they would have to offer teams? Basically every pick they have for the rest of eternity. And then, you know, because I don't know if people want Khalil Mack at that salary. I don't think people want Hicks at his age. I don't know if people want Eddie Jackson after last year. So I don't know what else. I mean, I guess Roquan Smith and Kyle Fuller, like that. You know, so you give him a bunch of picks and those two guys, maybe?
Maybe. Ross, just to follow up on your thought on Nagy for a second, it's a good point. 28-20 is respectable. Had the 12-4 come after the 8-8 seasons, then I think you'd be right, and it would be silly to think he'd be on the hot seat. The fact that he raised expectations at 12-4 and followed up with two mediocre seasons, I think, is what gets people kind of triggered in Chicago, because there's this feeling that it's trending in the wrong direction, and it's a symbol of unmet expectations, which is, I think, as big as anything. So that's why I think there's pressure on this team to do something in 2021, and there was a feeling that they could justify launching both guys at the end of last season, even though they made the playoffs, because then making the playoffs, it was an expanded field, and they showed how much they belonged by the way they think that they played against the Saints.
Understood, and I get that. What my counter to that would be, I don't really understand why Pace and Nagy are necessarily tied at the hip. And I feel like if most teams had done what the Bears had done the last 3 years with that roster and that quarterback play, I mean, like, I think, again, this is sort of the national perspective. I think Matt Nagy's in the top half of coaches in the league. And that doesn't mean he shouldn't get fired at some point. I mean, the Eagles just fired Doug Peterson,
right,
who won a Super Bowl, you know, 3 years ago, and I think he's a top 10 coach in the league. So that doesn't mean it's like a lifetime appointment. I guess I would just let, you know, in Philadelphia, they only won 4 games, and they had a pretty talented roster, and the quarterback play dropped off the face of the earth. I guess I think we're all in agreement. I just would like to see what Nagy could do if they had a quarterback who's in the top half of the league. I mean, just even a top 20 quarterback, just something like that, or a top 20 quarterback and a roster that's in the top half of the league. It's not. It's a roster that's bottom half of the league, and it's quarterback play that's bottom 10 at best. I think a lot of people would say bottom 5. And so I guess my argument would be, I think he's won a decent amount of football games considering. I mean, even just this guy, like, think about, you know, like the Cardinals just went out and got J.J. Watt, right? I mean, the Cardinals have Kyler Murray. The Cardinals have DeAndre Hopkins, Patrick Peterson. I know Chandler Jones got hurt. You know, Kenyon Drake transitioned. Like, they didn't make the playoffs, and Nagy did. With Trubisky and, I guess, Allen Robinson and Khalil Mack. I mean, if Kingsbury has a job, Nagy should have a job. Let's put it that way.
I'm not arguing that at all, and I think you're making great points. The only thing that I would say You're not allowed to lose three in a row, let alone four in a row. You're certainly not allowed to lose six straight games. And I know he tried all sorts of things, and they had to change quarterbacks, and he had to give up play calling. But good God, when you lose six games in a row, it doesn't matter. I don't care if you're Bill Belichick. You've got your job could be in question. That's just not allowed in the league, period, end of story.
To Dave's point, the only thing I would say about that is they did finish strong. So I know, you know, what he was saying about if they had been 8-8, 8-8, and then 12 and 4, I think right. That's a good point. I would say to your point, Mully, six losses in a row. I mean, I've been on some bad teams, man. I don't know that we ever lost six games in a row. And I was on some really bad teams. That's hard to do. I'm almost impressed with the Will Ferrell line. I'm not even mad. I'm almost impressed. But, no, in all sincerity, they did finish strong. Like, they did look a lot better. People say, well, look who they played. We can't have that both ways. Like, you can't say, well, look who they play when they're losing, and then just say, well, look who they played when they're winning. They did look a lot better at the end of the year, and I thought that was as big a reason any why they came back this year.
Good stuff.
Yeah, I thought they'd win the playoff game, yeah. Ross. I really did. I thought the Saints were ripe for the picking, and I thought the Bears could win that game, believe it or not. And they just couldn't score any points. It was just shocking.
And Ross, we got to get out of here. But the only thing I'd say, too, is that when you talk about – I think it's a really good point about the quarterback play and what would Matt Nagy do with a top 20 quarterback. That's a question we ask ourselves a lot in Chicago. But he was brought here to kind of fix the quarterback. And because – you know, of Mitch was here and he wasn't able to do that. So I think that, you know, you have strike one against you in terms of his quarterback development does not separate. It's not separated from Matt Nagy because he was here to develop the quarterback.
Well, but David, I mean, on some level, maybe Trubisky's not developable. You know what I mean? Like now here's what I would say. They're going to have another quarterback this year, I think, which means it'll be the third quarterback for Nagy. I don't know who it'll be, but whatever it is, they're going to have to win because he'll at least have gotten three chances then, right? Like he got the Trubisky chance, he got the Foles chance, he'll get whoever they have this year chance, and whether the guy's a top 20 guy or not, you got to figure it out with one of those three and get them to play at a consistent high level.
Yep.
Thanks so much, Ross. Great catching up with you. Really appreciate your time.
Good stuff.
Yeah,
thanks.
Good to see you guys. See ya.
Yeah, you too.
Twitch is fun.
That's
Ross Tucker. He joined us on the Score Hotline. It's presented by Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park on North Avenue or apford.com. And, of course, Ross, radio.com, NFL Insider, Insider Calls, presented by BetQL. BetQL is here to help us all make better bets through real, proven analytics. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. Check out Ross's daily betting podcast, BetQL Daily. It's live every weekday from 10 a.m. to 1 Eastern Time on Radio.com. I feel like we have to talk about this now, David. I wanted to get back to some of the rule changes stuff, but I mean, here's my dilemma, and let's think about this before we come back. What do you do if indeed you end up firing Ryan Pace? Does that mean that now Matt Nagy is in charge? Does that mean you hire a general manager that Matt Nagy wants? Does his power increase because you couldn't win with what the other guy gave you? These are kind of the dilemmas that come up when you talk about why they're not connected.
I'll have an answer. I got thoughts.
Good. Yeah, I'm sure you always have thoughts. You have good thoughts, and we'll get to them next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Have you made a determination whether Mitch Trubisky will return next year, or whether you're interested in a return from him?
Yeah, you know, again, that's going to be part of our offseason plan, and we're not going to lay all that out right now, Pat. You know, it's just those are all internal discussions we've had. But, you know, I would say, again, everything's on the table with all the quarterbacks.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's, of course, Ryan Pace from the little news conference earlier in the week. Can't tell you about it. kind of a secret news conference, but there were some things said that made no sense and other things made a little bit of sense, but we can't discuss it.
Let me tell you, that table that everything is on for the Bears, it isn't just this little card table or an end table. This is a giant mahogany structure that sits in the middle of a conference room that has to be large enough to fit all of their possibilities when everything is on the table. He doesn't mean just like this little thing. It's enormous.
I would say, again, everything's on the table with all the quarterbacks.
All right. Ross Tucker, excellent. Always fun to talk football with Ross. I'm sorry we didn't get into some of the rule changes stuff, but it just got too interesting, and it makes you think. I don't argue with him that the two guys are different people, that maybe we should separate the coach from the GM. But I do go back to that idea, if you get rid of the GM and you keep the coach, what then?
Let's look at the calendar, Mullen. It's March, okay? Season, 2020 season is over. If this was December, if this was November, I think you could make that argument, and I think that you would have a good one. And he did talk about that. He was one of those guys that said, you know, you don't have to join these guys at the hip philosophically and moving forward. Their futures could be different. You could keep the coach and fire the GM. And I tended to agree with that before the season ended. Now that you have given both guys a vote of confidence, and I do think that that's exactly what they got, because I think that George McCaskey believes in both guys. I think it has more to do with that than it does with economics, as one of the texters alluded to. Now that that has happened, they are aligned. Their futures, their philosophies, they are in lockstep in every way. So if one stays, both stay. If one goes, both go. I don't see any other scenario at the end of next season where one has a different fate or plight than the other. Do you?
Let's say you. I'm just thinking it through. Let's say you have another 500 season.
Okay.
Okay. So how do you fire a coach that has a winning record, that has been to the playoffs twice, albeit once where they expanded the playoffs? Whatever. I don't think 8-8's getting them in the playoffs this year. But you know, it's abject mediocrity, as we've discussed. How do you fire that guy when he has a winning record, when he's been to the playoffs a couple times, when he should have won a game if the kicker hadn't failed? And meanwhile, I think the GM, you can't come back for year 8 if you're going 500 again. I don't care how Ted Phillips splits up the first 3 years and then the other three, and then there was that 1 year and I compartmentalized this minute. It's just it's too long to give a guy to get a 5-year plan enacted if you're going to go 500 again. David, the schedule's tougher, okay? They don't have a quarterback right now that gives you great confidence. They're going to be, you know, they would have to make this huge move. And if they make this huge move, how damaging is that in other areas of the team? So I think if you bring in Russell Wilson, you're a 10-win team. You take 8, you go to 10. It might go to 13. I mean, he's that good a player. If you bring in Deshaun Watson, you're going to 10 to plus, right?
Yeah.
No one else gets me there.
If you bring in one of those two guys, you become an instant contender in the NFC. I think it's that big of a move, that bold of a stroke. But if not, then you're looking at, you know, 8-8, 9-8, whatever, however many games they play.
That's right.
You're flirting with 500. But I think that's why internally, organizationally, you have to have, even though you may not want to acknowledge it publicly, you've got to have a criteria that has to be met. And there has to be an or else implied. And I think that has to be communicated to your general manager and to your head coach. And then, Molly, I do think the only thing I differ with what you said is if you do meet those standards and you do make the playoffs, if that is what the standard is set as, okay, minimum standard, make the playoffs. Well, if you're 9-8, if you're 11-6 or however many games they play, you get in, you get in. Then you have to live with what the decisions you make and the standards you set. So I don't think that you would make a move under those circumstances if you find a way to get back to the postseason. Then it would be difficult. But if you don't and you see some strides on offense that maybe make you think, oh, geez, the head coach is getting through to these guys, but you don't think the general manager is putting together a good roster, I don't think you can make that distinction at that point, because if you don't make the playoffs, both have to go.
You know, Lovie went 10-6 and didn't make the playoffs and got fired. The whole make the playoffs thing is kind of idiotic, isn't it?
I don't know that it is. I think every case is different, and I don't want that to sound like an excuse. Lovie's decision, in retrospect, was a bad one for the history of the Chicago Bears, and I don't like using bad decisions to justify others' bad decisions. And I think that's what would happen. It's like, well, you know, he didn't make the playoffs; they fired him, and you could. I don't know. You know what I mean? I think that's it's every situation is different, and this one certainly with the Bears. They have yet to win a playoff game, and you have. I think that would be, you know, if I were establishing the standards, I wouldn't be making the playoffs. It would be win a playoff.
Winning
game.
In the playoffs, I agree with you. Now, here's the one other thing that I think is amusing: they can't go 500 this year. They're either going to be, if there's 17 games, they apparently have a Raiders game at the end of the year in Vegas. Meet you there.
Well, technically, you know, Mully, 8-1. You know what's going to happen.
They'll pull that off. I love it. Yeah.
8-8
Hell, they could do even better than that. Like, we get the new rule in, they could go like 4-4-9. I don't know.
That's my prediction, though, as we sit here March 5th. 8-8-1.
That's awesome. That is hysterical. Oh, my God. That's too funny. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. Yeah, I you know, listen, I think you're right. I think it's fun to talk to Ross, and he gives you a more of a national perspective, and it is interesting to hear that he believes Matt Nagy is that good a coach. But the fact of the matter is, he's here. There is going to be a season, and then we'll judge everything based on how this season goes down. And in order to pull that off, we're going to have to judge the off-season moves that either give you a chance to win or reduce your chance to win. At this point, they're trying to maneuver some money. They're trying to save some money. They're trying to move some contract stuff around. To what end? What is it that is out there? We're waiting to see.
We're waiting to see, because the suggestion is that they have a bold stroke in them. It's going to be a big move that everybody thinks that they want to see. It's news that you want to hear. But wanting it and wanting it to happen and seeing it happen are two different things. And it is very difficult to assign sort of this ultimatum or predict what's going to happen before you know who the quarterback is going to be. What I find it fascinating is that, you know, those things still people believe are possible. I don't know how the Texans could justify trading Deshaun Watson unless it's for multiple, like three or more first-round draft picks. The Bears don't have that to give. And I don't know how the Seahawks would be in the right minds would get rid of a quarterback.
Yeah.
So if it's not those two guys, I just don't know how bold or big these moves are going to be.
If you're the Seahawks and you decide, you know what, this quarterback is too good, we got to build our defense up, so we're going to get rid of the guy, why would you let him stay in the conference? Why would you let him be a barrier to you ever getting to another Super Bowl? It just doesn't make any sense to me. Even if they were to trade him, don't they have to put him in the AFC and let him fight it out with Mahomes? Could they really put him in Chicago and think, well, Aaron Rodgers will stop him from doing anything? I think it'd be a terrible decision on their part.
Well, the only team in the AFC that he would approve a trade to already doubled down on their quarterback this week at Derek Carr and Mike Mayock, saying he would pound his fist and pound the table with John Gruden for Derek Carr. So that leaves the Cowboys, the Bears, and the Saints. Okay, the Cowboys are going to commit to Dak Prescott. You think that's going to happen? The Saints are $50 million over the salary cap or some ungodly sum. That's not going to happen. Doesn't seem realistic. So that's why people are latching on to this idea that the Bears make the most sense and that he loves the offensive line, because we're searching, we're grasping, we're reaching for a lot of things that may or may not be there. So that's why I think you're seeing people want to attach the Bears to Russell Wilson, because it's the only team on his list that you could really see making sense.
Mike Mayock getting on a table with John Gruden and a 10-year deal. I would go with the coach over the quarterback on that one, David.
Probably so. I think so. All right.
Gruden would ride his bike through the snow.
Mayock's a tough guy, though. You know, I don't know if you ever.
Oh, I love Mayock. Don't get me wrong.
He's a tough guy.
I just don't know who wins that battle because I think he works for the other guy. All right, we're going to bring in Ron Coomer, our friend Ron Coomer. God, it's so great to have baseball, to have Cubs talk with the Coom Dog. We'll do that next. It is, of course, Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.